The first rule, which is kind of a comical rule, is stand up straight with your shoulders back. You want to present yourself to the world in a manner that doesn't disgrace you in some sense. That might be a good way to think about it. And you don't want to disgrace yourself, because the consequence of disgrace is emotional dysregulation. More pain, less positive emotion. And so the best way to present yourself is to stand up forthrightly and to stretch out, you know, and to occupy some space and to make yourself sort of vulnerable by doing that, because you open up the front of your body, right? But it's a sign of confidence. And that way people are most likely to give you the benefit of the doubt. And that's a good way to start regulating your mood. But not only does it directly regulate your mood to stand up, because it's so tightly associated, like postural flexion is associated with serotonin and emotional regulation, but also because if you straighten up and you present yourself in that manner, then other people are more likely to take you seriously. And that's another way that you can at least give yourself the bloody benefit of the doubt, right? And confront the world in a courageous manner. And that's a really good way of figuring out how to establish yourself in multiple competence hierarchies, because one of the general rules of thumb about how to be successful is to confront things that frighten you forthrightly and with courage. And that's kind of a universal strategy for success. Rule number two is treat yourself like you're someone that you care about. You should figure out how you would like to be treated, like you were taking care of yourself, not how you would like people to respond to you. It's more important than that. It's like, imagine you had a child that you really cared for, and someone said, well, people will treat this child exactly like you want them to, but you have to figure out what that is. And so then you'd have to sit down for like a month and you'd think, okay, well, how do you want your child to be treated? You don't want everyone just to be nice to him, you know. You want people to challenge him, and you want people to discipline him, and you want people to tell him when he's wrong. It's like, you don't just want everyone to be nice. That's pathetic. It's pathetic. There's no challenge in that. And so, well, you want to treat other people like you would like to be treated. Well, then you have to figure out, how would you like to be treated? And while you'd like people to fawn all over you and just lay everything at your feet, it's like, no, that's not something you'd wish for someone that you were taking care of. And then there's an additional problem, which is, it's often the case that people will treat other people better than they treat themselves. That happens extremely frequently. So one of the things I pointed out in chapter two was that if you have a dog and you take him to a vet and the vet gives you the prescription medicine, you'll go buy the medicine and you will give it to the dog and you will do it properly. But if you go yourself to a doctor and you get a prescription, there's a 30% chance you won't even pick up the medication. And if you do, there's a 50% chance that you won't administer it to yourself properly. And so I really thought about that. When I first came across that statistic, it was another one of those little facts. I thought, what the hell's up with that? It's like, you'll do it for your dog, so obviously you'll do it for something you care about, and you're conscientious enough so you'll actually do it. So, like, why wouldn't you do it for you? Your dog likes you. You know, even your dog would rather that you did, but you don't. And it's actually one of the reasons that modern medicine doesn't work nearly as well as it could, because people just don't take their medication. And it's not only because they don't take care of themselves. There's some skepticism about doctors, but you could be just as skeptical about the vet. In rule two, it's a bit of a meditation on why people don't like themselves very much. And I think there's two reasons, really. And one is that we're fragile and damageable and imperfect in multiple dimensions all the time. And that often just gets worse. Lots of things get worse as you get old, for example. So it's not necessarily that easy for a self-conscious being who's extraordinarily aware of his or her own fragility but not just fragility, foolishness and errors. Like, you know yourself better than anyone else knows you. And, you know, you might have a certain amount of dislike for someone you know because of something they did, but you know everything you did. Jesus, that's a drag, man. You know, you have to carry that along behind. It's like, really, I did that, you know? And then, so there's that. It's like you're weak and kind of useless and prone to temptation. And you know all those things. You know, that just shouldn't be that way. And then you're also capable of pretty vicious acts of malevolence. And so you also know that about yourself. And so it's a real existential question for people. It's like, why the hell should you take care of something as sorry and wretched as you are? And that's really what the chapter is about. It's because the answer in the chapter is, yeah, you know, you're, first of all, yes, you're pretty useless and terrible, but so is everyone else, and that's actually an existential problem, right? And what I mean by that, it's a problem that every human being has always had and always will. So it's not just you, it's a universal problem. And that there's an answer to that, and one of them is to, what is it to say? Love the sinner, but hate the sin. It's something like that, is that despite the fact that you're not all that you could be, the proper attitude to have towards yourself is the attitude that you would have towards someone that you genuinely cared for. And that it's incumbent on you to act as if you genuinely care for yourself, just like you would act towards someone that you actually cared about, some other person. And so it's a reversal in some sense of the golden rule, right? And it's a discussion of why that's necessary. And also, more than that, it's a discussion of why you have a moral obligation to do that. It's not just that you should because it would be better for you. You actually have a moral obligation to do that, I think, because you make the world a much better place, a much worse place, if you don't take care of yourself. So you should bloody well take care of yourself, you know, because, well, that's what the chapter's about. It's partly because you have something valuable to bring into the world. That's the thing about being an individual. It's the thing that Western civilization has always recognized, that as an individual, you have a light that you have to bring into the world. And that if you don't bring it into the world is a dimmer place. And that's a bad thing, because when the world is a dim place, it can get very, very, very dark. And so it's necessary, not just so that you feel better, not just so that you're a number one lobster, none of those things. You need to take care of yourself because you're in the best position to do that. And it's necessary for you to take care of yourself. Despite the fact that we're mortal and vulnerable and self-conscious and capable, not only capable of doing terrible things, but actually do them. Despite all that, you still have that responsibility. And so I wanted to, you know, hit the question as hard as I can to try to figure out, well, why people are contemptuous of themselves. And there's plenty of reason, that's for sure. But the reasons do not justify the mistreatment of yourself. It's as simple as that. It's not a good strategy. And the next rule is make friends with people who want the best for you. And that's a meditation on my own childhood and adolescence to some degree. I had friends who wanted the best for me and friends who didn't. And, you know, they were friends who, some of them were aiming up and some of them were aiming down. And if you have a friend that's aiming down and you do something that's aiming up, then they're generally not that happy about it, you know. They try to top your accomplishment with one of their own, hypothetical or real, or put down what you're doing, or offer you a cigarette if you're trying to quit and you've kind of done that successfully, or a drink if you've been drinking too much and are just trying to stop being an alcoholic, you know. Or yeah, they're cynical and bitter and devoted towards no good. And sometimes that's family members too, and sometimes it's even part of you, you know. But this chapter is an injunction to people. Is like you have an ethical responsibility to take care of yourself, you have an ethical responsibility to surround yourself with people who have the courage and faith and wisdom to wish you well when you've done something good, and to stop you when you're doing something destructive. And if your friends aren't like that, then they're not your friends. And maintaining your friendships with them might not even be in their interest. Number four is compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to who someone else is today. See, I'd been taught as a psychologist that most human characteristics were normally distributed, right? So most people were average and some people were extreme. That's a normal distribution. Intelligence is like that, and height, there's more people of average height than very tall or very short, and weight is like that, and lots of things are normally distributed, and psychologists tend to assume that everything is, but it isn't. Creative products are distributed in a Pareto distribution, and that's a whole different thing, and it's really important to know this. It's another fundamental fact, the knowledge of which can sort of transform the way you conceptualize, let's say, the political landscape. So here's an example of the Pareto distribution. You know, there's a rule of thumb that if you run a company that 20% of your employees do 80% of the work, or that 20% of your customers are responsible for 80% of your sales, or that 20% of them are responsible for 80% of the customer service calls. Same thing. But that's not exactly the rule. The rule is worse than that. The rule is, in a given domain, the square root of the number of people operating in that domain do half the productive work. So you think, well, you have 10 employees, three of them do half the work. It's like, yeah, okay. What if you have 100 employees? Then 10 of them do half the work.
Thanks for listening. Kindly support the movement of this podcast by supporting us or subscribing to our premium content for more exclusive stuff. When you do so, you also get a shout out in our next episode. Thank you.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.